Hi, and welcome to this audio edition of Polygamy, What Love Is This? With host Doris Hansen. On this program, we discuss polygamy and Mormon fundamentalism from a biblical Christian perspective. We talk about the history of polygamy, its modern-day fruit, share stories from people who have escaped polygamy, and talk about current events related to polygamy. You can learn more about the video edition of this program at whatloveisthis.tv. And now, here's Doris.
Welcome to our program tonight, Polygamy, What Love Is This? I'm your host, Doris Hansen, and tonight we're going to discuss Emma Smith and her trials as a polygamous wife. But first, I'd like to say something about the responses that we received last week from the show. A number of the folks called, of our viewers called, and they also emailed us accusing me of telling lies. Well, I'd like to say this. If it's the truth, it can't be a lie. And how do you know it's a lie if you don't check it out for yourself to find out what the truth is? You know, I've talked with folks a lot of times, and they'll tell me that they don't need to check things out, that they already know what the truth is. Well, that's in direct rebellion to what God told us to do. He told us to check out everything. Well, I'd like you to tell me this, if you would. First of all, where have I lied? If I've lied about something, please tell me what the lie is, and then give the references from your own personal resource and research to tell me what the truth is that made what I said into a lie. And if you can't prove that I've lied, please don't call me a liar. You know, this show, what we want to do here is we want to uncover many of the hidden things that have been buried in early Mormon polygamy history and even up until today. And when we begin to talk about these historical events, we find that many people are understandably shocked when they discover that some of their early church leaders were involved in some of these things, and so they deny the truth, and then they, in turn, turn around and accuse the messenger of lying. Well, we suggest that you launch your own search for the truth. I'm going to give you some websites that you can go on, and you can search for the truth on those websites. And I want you to know that these websites have all the documentation, they have all the footnotes, they have all of the historical proofs and documentation, like I said, that what's on their website is historical fact. So I suggest that you begin with these websites, www.utlm.org. mrm.org, shieldandrefuge.org, livinghopeutah.org, and irr.org. Now, there's links on every one of these web pages that you could go on and launch your own internet search for the truth, and this is what we suggest that you do. Our purpose on this show is not to humiliate or to demean anyone. We don't want to mock or to abase polygamists. On the contrary, we have a deep heart's desire to get the truth out to polygamists to know that they don't have to live polygamy to please God and to get into heaven. We merely wish to bring to the polygamous people and others who will listen as well, those who might be searching for hope and for freedom that comes from knowing the truth. This is a live broadcast from Salt Lake City, Utah, and this is a telephone call-in program. We particularly, would like to hear from polygamous people, but of course all of our viewers are important, and so you can call in about halfway through the show when we open the phone lines. Our phone number is 801-973-TV20, 801-973-8820. We do have a helps ministry to polygamists. And again, contrary to what we've been accused of, we do not force our beliefs or anything else on anyone. We are here to help. Yes, we are a Christian organization. And just like hundreds of Christian organizations all over the world, we reach out and help people in need without demanding anything in return. We don't expect you to start to believe or force you to believe anything. That's the kind of what you just came out of. We certainly don't want to do that to you again. We just want to help. And we offer help for anyone coming out of a polygamous group. If you need help to leave, we'll help you leave. If you'd like to go to our webpage, shieldandrefuge.org, you can go to our contact page and write down our contact information. We have a toll-free number if you or someone you know needs help. If you are being abused or neglected or molested, or if you're forced into a marriage you don't want, you can call us. You can also call 911 for emergency. But write down our toll-free number, and maybe sometime in the near future or someone else may need our help. Our number is 877-425-9993. We also help folks who have left polygamy groups. Do you need help with food or rent or legal issues, or if you just need someone to talk to, if you need someone to counsel with, we'll help you. Give us a call. Let us know what you need, and we'll see if we can give you that help. We have a monthly discussion group, and we meet once a month. We're going to meet next Tuesday evening at 6:30. That's February 17th. If you would like to join us, please email us at tv@aboutpolygamy.com. We also have an online support group, and if you would like to join that, please email us as well, and we'll give you the details for it. And the webpage for our show is whatloveisthis.tv, www.whatloveisthis.tv. Now, our historical moment for tonight is I have read in early Mormon history that Joseph Smith had at one time declared all previous vows and marriages invalid if the people involved had not been married in the Mormon Church, or if they were not members of the Mormon Church when they got married. And as we've talked before, Joseph Smith had 33 wives besides Emma. And fully one-third of those wives, 11 of his wives, were women who were already married and living with their husbands, by the way. Well, now, by the way, this isn't a lie. If you want to check this out, you can find a book called In Sacred Loneliness. It's written by Todd Compton. He has everything documented, everything. There's a lot of historical proofs there, journals and diaries and so on. So you can check that out if you would like. But at any rate, when Joseph Smith declared that all marriages were invalid, that freed up these 11 women who were already married to come over and marry him as plural wives. The odd thing about this is they stayed married to those husbands who were supposed to be invalid. But now Joseph Smith had the plural wifery with these married women that he won. By the way, he asked other married women to marry him than those 11, and they turned him down. We read accounts like this and we're saddened that faithful people then and now have been so deceived by their spiritual leaders. Tonight we want to discuss Emma. And, you know, I don't believe that Emma was deceived. She suffered a lot as a polygamist wife. And I don't believe that she was deceived by Joseph Smith. The first time she heard about it, she threw the paper it was on in the fire. She wasn't pleased with her prophet, polygamist husband. And tonight, as we talk about Emma Smith, I would like to introduce our guest who is going to discuss this with us. And this is Bill McKeever, and we want to thank you for coming again.
Thank you for having me. It's good to be here.
Well, we enjoyed the last time that you were on the show, and that was September 4th.
Oh my.
September 4th, been a while.
Yes.
And anyone who would like to see the show that he was on previously, you can go onto our website, whatloveisthis.tv, and click on 2008 and then find September 4th, and that's the show that he was on. By the way, we've had a lot of people that request you come back. They enjoyed that show so much.
Oh, thank you.
Bill is the founder and the director of the Mormon Research Ministry, which was founded in 1979. Would you care to take a few seconds and tell our viewers a little bit about your ministry?
Yeah, sure. We started in 1979 mainly as an opportunity to disseminate information concerning the teachings and the doctrine and history of the Mormon Church, and hopefully better inform the body of Christ as to what Mormons are told to believe or what Mormon leaders have actually taught on various issues. And so we have kind of an apologetic bent on one half, but at the other, on the other half, is we're certainly missional in that we want to reach out to the Mormon people and share with them the gospel of grace as we understand it from the Bible. Mm-hmm. And so we have like a two-prong approach. And we've been blessed to see many people reevaluate their presuppositions and actually come out of the Mormon faith and find a saving faith in the Jesus of the Bible.
A really exciting
it is.
Life
when you get those emails and you get those phone calls, it's exciting.
Well, you had placed a review on your website on this, what is it, Emma Smith, mm-hmm. My Story, mm-hmm. That last film that they did, I believe. And so I thought it would be an interesting subject to discuss based, kind of launched off your review of that movie, to discuss Emma and her pain. She had a painful life as a polygamous wife.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
It wasn't all beauty and peace and everything that they tend to.
And that was one of the problems that I had with the film that's showing downtown, Joseph Smith, Prophet of the Restoration. When you watch that film, it gives you this idea that during the Nauvoo period that Joseph and Emma had this real idyllic marriage and that everything was just great, when it was actually during the Nauvoo period that I think she probably suffered the most and had quite a strain put on her marriage relationship because of the rumors that were flying around. And no doubt, you can't fool a lot of married women when your husband's messing around.
When she catches it.
Well, exactly. And there were certainly a lot of trials that she was going through at that particular time. And yet the film portrays it as if nothing else or nothing really serious was going on in their life, that everything was just great. Other than, of course, the persecution that was against her husband,
right,
which was what the film wants to focus on.
Right, the persecution.
Yeah.
The persecution. Well, but before we get started on Emma, I'd like to discuss a question with you that we had a couple of weeks ago from a caller, and I told them that I wanted to discuss this with you because you have so much insight into what's going on with the church today. But his question was, well, I don't know if it's a he, it was anonymous, but their question was, would the LDS Church ever give up Section 132 and remove it from their books and doctrine in their quest to become Christian?
I don't think they will. I don't think they really need to. And the reason being is that the Mormon Church has been engaged in some real serious deconstruction when it comes to some of these teachings. And what I mean by that is words that had certain meanings back when these things were written have tended to change definitions over mm-hmm. the years. I'm glad you gave me a heads up on this, so I was able to look up some things, and I thought it might help your audience to understand how these terms that are used in Section 132 have now found themselves to be defined differently. In 1873, for instance, this is a quote by Brigham Young. This is talking about the term celestial marriage. He says, "You will recollect, brethren and sisters, that it was July 1843 that he, speaking of Joseph Smith, received this revelation concerning celestial marriage. This doctrine was explained, and many received it as far as they could understand it. Some apostatized on account of it, okay,
mm-hmm.
but others did not and received it in their faith." Clearly what he's doing, he's equating celestial marriage with plural marriage.
Right.
So when you read Section 132 through the lens of a person who's living during the 19th century, it was understood very clearly what it was talking about. There would be no reason, for instance, in Section 132 for God to actually want to place a curse on Emma for not embracing all those that have been given to Joseph Smith if the term celestial marriage merely meant to be married for time and eternity.
Right.
Why would Emma be upset about that? You would think that she would want to be married to Joseph Smith throughout eternity. So there had to be something more to it than just that understanding.
Mm-hmm.
We find in 1891, this is a statement, this was an amnesty petition to the President of the United States. That's dated December 19th, 1891. It was signed by Wilford Woodruff, George Q. Cannon, and Joseph F. Smith. Wilford Woodruff being the fourth president of the church, who signed the manifesto. Joseph S. Smith would become the sixth president of the church. He says, "We formally taught our people that polygamy, or celestial marriage,
there we are, the same breath,
as commanded by God through Joseph Smith, was right, that it was a necessity to man's highest exaltation in the life to come. The doctrine was publicly promulgated by our president, the late Brigham Young, 40 years ago, and was steadily taught and impressed upon the Latter-day Saints up to the short time before September 1890, which would be a reference to the manifesto. Our people are devout and sincere, and they accepted the doctrine, and many embraced and practiced polygamy. So again, it's tied in with celestial marriage. It's the mm-hmm. same thing.
It's the same thing.
Now here's the twist. Here's what we see in 1914. This is a statement by Heber J. Grant, Anthony Ivins, and J. Reuben Clark, the first presidency in 1914. Celestial marriage, that is, marriage for time and eternity, and polygamous or plural marriage are not synonymous terms. So you see what they've done.
Oh, that changed.
They've
yes.
actually changed the definition. Mm-hmm. So I think in the case of many Latter-day Saints, or even people who would be looking into this and maybe talking to their LDS friends, the reason they don't see a real need to just dump it entirely is because these words have taken on new meanings. It would be easy for them, unless you ask some more penetrating questions, mm-hmm. if you really understood the history behind it, which of course most people don't, they wouldn't know what questions to ask.
Right.
And so it can easily be explained away as merely time and eternity. That's what this celestial marriage is all about. And it's something that not only takes place in this lifetime, but also will go on into the next life. So in light of that, I don't really see them really just dumping Section 132. You can imagine the public relations nightmare that could cause.
It would be.
I mean, when you look at it, look at what they did when the Mormon Church changed, for instance, 30 verse 6, when it talked about the Lamanites turning white and delightsome after they embraced it. Well, they changed this in 1981 to say pure.
Mm-hmm.
To go back, they said, to a rendering that I believe was in the 1837 edition of the Book of Mormon, because it didn't read that way in the 1830.
Mm-hmm.
But in 1837, I believe, with the second printing, they changed the word white to pure. And then for some reason, and it's not even well explained even by Mormon historians, in the next edition, it went back to white, and it stayed white up until 1981.
Mm-hmm.
Well, when they made that correction, of course, a lot of people, myself included, said, well, wait a minute, you know, what is it supposed to say? What is it actually, what is it telling us? And of course, the argument was, well, it was just talking about a spiritual cleansing. It had nothing to do with skin color. Well, the problem, of course, there's too many other verses that didn't get changed that clearly refer to skin color.
Mm-hmm.
So when you try to change things like that, they don't go unnoticed. And I think the Mormon Church would find itself getting a lot more criticism by dumping it than by just explaining it away.
And they do explain it away very good.
Yeah.
Also, I don't see the Mormon Church throwing off or getting rid of a lot of doctrine in their quest to become Christian, because a lot of their belief, or most of their beliefs, are clearly non-Christian beliefs, and yet they don't change those.
No.
They just want to look Christian, but they don't want
to
become Christian.
They do sometimes have a tendency to take away the sharp edges by trying to make it sound like there's not a whole lot of difference between their understanding and our understanding, which of course really isn't true when you look at all the many quotations from Mormon leaders that concur with this type of understanding throughout their own history. They mm-hmm. they don't believe like evangelicals on a lot of very important issues.
Mm-hmm. Okay, we had a viewer call last week, and he wanted to know about the first wife of Joseph Smith that was even before Emma, and I had never heard of it before, and of course, there's a lot of things I haven't heard of, and so I said, well, we'll ask our guest next week. He knows everything.
My kids aren't listening to that.
Do you know anything about a first wife before Emma?
I don't know of any wife that Joseph Smith married before Emma. He would have been very, very young had he done that. Emma is always regarded as being his first wife.
Mm-hmm.
It could have been that, I don't know what he was what this person was reading. Was it him? I don't know.
I believe it was a he, yes.
Yeah. I don't know what they're reading. It could be some confusion as to when Emma was sealed to Joseph Smith.
Because two women were sealed to him before she was.
That could be the confusion. But as far as the civil marriage, I don't know of anybody before Emma.
Okay, so I hope, if you're watching the show tonight, I hope that answered your question. Maybe there is a confusion about the sealing and the legal marriage. Now, since there aren't a lot of personal papers that Emma herself wrote about, personal journals and diaries, we have to get a lot of her information from other people's diaries. Mm-hmm. And that doesn't make it any less valid. It just means that we can't necessarily get into her heart to really, but because we're human too, we can understand the pain that she would go through. Let's discuss Joseph and Emma's courtship. She was, 21, and He was 21.
I think he was 21. She was 22, and they finally got married. That was February, I think, or January.
I think it was February.
January, 1827, something like that.
Yeah.
It was kind of a rocky courtship because Isaac Hale, Emma's father, certainly didn't like Joseph Smith.
Right.
He didn't like Joseph Smith. He didn't like the work he was involved in, being a money digger, working for Josiah Stoll. So he wasn't real impressed with Joseph Smith. And it sounds like he wasn't impressed with him even after they got married.
Right.
certainly it was very difficult. And you can imagine that, of course, would also weigh on Emma because I think when a young couple gets married, there's probably nothing more than most would probably want is the blessing of the parents.
Mm-hmm.
One of the reasons being if there isn't a blessing of the parents upon that relationship, if anything goes very badly, mm-hmm. it's kind of like, gee, I was told and I didn't listen, or the parents saying, I told you so, and that certainly doesn't help in the relationship either.
Yeah.
So you would think that they would want that, and here Emma doesn't have this. She's raised in a Christian environment, as we understand. She's
That's
raised Methodist, I believe.
Yeah.
And so that, I would think, would be very important to have the parents' blessing and understanding upon the relationship. And she doesn't get this.
Mm-hmm.
Isaac Hale does not want to condone this marriage relationship, so they end up having to elope.
Yeah, they snuck out and got married.
Exactly.
And then they didn't even go back to her home. They went to his
home.
That's right.
And then after they moved west, I don't think she ever saw her parents ever again. So it's kind of a tragic story when you think about it.
And it sounded like she and her parents up to that point had a pretty good relationship with each other too. So, and then I think that he required, I think he offered to help Joseph Smith get a farm, but only if he would give up money digging and necromancy and some of those things, which he, and to get a real job.
Mm-hmm.
And so he agreed to
do. He promised, yes,
and
he did.
And then he more or less kept the promise until he found the golden plates, mm-hmm. but he was digging for them. Anyway, Emma faced a lot of personal trials. She had 11 babies.
Right.
And six of them died either right after birth or at least while they were infants.
Yeah, I think their firstborn son died not long after.
I think so. Mm-hmm. And then she had twins that died.
Mm-hmm.
Another woman had twins at the same time. The woman died. They adopted.
Murdoch twins.
Yeah.
Julia.
They adopted
twins. That's Julia is the one that the character Julia is in the film.
Mm-hmm.
And the aged Emma Smith is having this conversation with her,
with this adopted daughter. Right.
And they're kind of reminiscing about a lot of these past events in Emma's life and some of the struggles that she went through, some of the struggles that Julia went through. I mean, she didn't have an easy life either.
Yeah, well, that
so
like
that's what the film
did.
Is kind of about when they're talking to each other.
Evidently, Joseph Smith, in some of his escapades, she found out that he was having extramarital relationships with them. And, of course, we know that's when the doctrine of polygamy came in. But a real quick question before we move into some of this other. Do you really believe that Joseph Smith truly wanted to know and do God's will and that he really believed polygamy was God's will?
I'm not convinced of that. I'm sure Mormons would take issue with that, but I'm not convinced of that. My understanding of Joseph Smith and what I see him doing is typically from my point of view and my study of Joseph Smith is I think this is a man who was a con man. I don't believe it was really for serious religious reasons whatsoever. I think the whole thing was a con from the beginning. The struggle that I have with Joseph Smith is the way he handles this issue, the plates issue, and other issues with his own wife. If there's nothing else that is more precious between a married couple, it's trust and being totally honest with each other. And I see Joseph Smith lying to Emma about a lot of issues. And I'm sorry, I'm old school. I feel if a man can lie to his wife, he can lie to anybody. And certainly Joseph Smith did lie to Emma about these affairs that he was having. Of course, Mormons would say, well, they weren't affairs. They were legal in the eyes of God. Well, according to Joseph Smith, but see, that's the whole debate.
Yes.
See, that's the whole issue.
It is.
And so you can't just make that conclusion and just, you know, turn a blind eye to all this.
Right.
But even when it comes to the plates, Joseph Smith tells Emma, you're not supposed to look at them. God told me that nobody can look at these plates. And so she talks about how when she felt the plates and actually moved them around on the table to dust around them, which would have been quite a feat had they been really made of the metals that Joseph Smith was claiming. But yet she says how she talks about how she ran her fingers across the edge and it made a metallic sound like metal pages. Well, if they were really gold, they wouldn't have made that sound at all because gold doesn't make that sound.
Yeah.
So obviously we've got a problem here.
Mm-hmm.
But she never, from what I understand, she never bothered to take a peek. So she,
That's what she said.
To assume she had an incredible amount of trust in Joseph Smith. But yet, we don't find him really reciprocating so much in a lot of areas when it comes to her.
And I think
that's troublesome.
I think that trust gradually dissipated, too, through these affairs that he had.
Mm-hmm.
Now, from 1833 to 1836 was the years that Smith was having his affair with Fanny Alger.
Fanny Alger, the housemaid.
I doubt that this event was put in that movie.
Oh, of course not. No. No, there's no mention of Fanny Alger in the film, that's for sure.
But it is a documented historical event.
There's really no arguing this. I think the sources, William McClellan talks about this and the fact that, Joseph Smith took Fanny Alger into the home as like a maid, a servant girl, and working in the house, I think in 1835. She was about 19 years old at the time, I think.
Mm-hmm.
And he ends up having this affair with her. And I'm using that word very purposely because even Mormon historians say it's hard to determine whether or not she was the first plural wife. Some say yes, some say, well, I don't know about that because there were really no witnesses that we know of, no documentation whatsoever.
She was a wife.
But as you mentioned, Emma at one time was looking for Joseph and Fanny, didn't know where they were, and she finds them rolling around in the hay, and you can understand that's going to be pretty traumatic for her.
It'd be very, very difficult, I can imagine, especially when she had that trust that we've been talking about. And it surely dissipates. I'd like to quote very briefly something that John Krakauer said in Under the Banner of Heaven. He said that Emma had married Joseph. She loved him. She expected him to honor his wedding vows of faithfulness. But she was no shrinking violet. That at one point, during the introduction of plural marriage, she threatened to take a plural husband if Joseph didn't give up on the plural wife thing. And so when Joseph Smith finally wrote down the polygamy revelation, he was sure to put in there, and quote, "And I command mine handmaid Emma Smith to abide and cleave unto my servant Joseph and to none else." That's probably why he put that in there, because she had threatened to take...
A typical guy. It's okay for me, but it's not okay for you.
What's good for the goose is not good for the gander.
I'll tell you, Doris. It's really, you know, there's a lot of things regarding Mormonism that I certainly don't agree with as a Bible-believing Christian. There's few subjects within Mormonism that really upset me more than this, because of the way I feel Joseph Smith treated Emma. It was just horrible when it comes to this and the deception that was involved in this. I gave a presentation on this subject of polygamy at a seminary a while back, and I opened it up by saying you cannot discuss the subject of polygamy and leave out the word deception, because deception is all over it.
It is.
There was constant lying about what was going on.
It is in today's polygamy groups the same way, for most of them anyway. You know, I don't want to blanket everything, but for most of it, it is. It's, you mentioned in your review of the movie, quote, "It's impossible to tell the Mormon story in a positive light without leaving out a lot of information." Would you like to briefly just
explain that? Well, the Fanny Alger episode would certainly be one of them. I can't imagine for a minute a film like Joseph Smith, Prophet of the Restoration, which is made under the auspices of the First Presidency, and them allowing that kind of information to go out. Because these are films that are supposed to build up their heroes.
Mm-hmm.
They're supposed to build
it
them
does.
Up. And a lot of people, and it's understandable being a Latter-day Saint, I can see why they would want to look to Joseph Smith as being probably the epitome of virtue. I understand that. The problem, of course, is when we look at the facts, we look at a lot of the things that are left out of the seminary textbooks and are left out of the history books. Not all of them. You have to know where to look, you know, but in many of them, a lot of the average Latter-day Saints don't even know this stuff about Joseph Smith, because all they read are really the faith-promoting books that are supplied to them to the CES. And so when they hear a lot of these things, like what you heard last week, you know, naturally they assume, without looking into it themselves,
right,
that you must be making this up and you must be lying. Mm-hmm. I remember one time I was taking a Q&A after a presentation that I gave, and I had to explain to this LDS gentleman that was in the crowd that first said that I had taken everything out of context, which is often the big one.
Yeah.
You know, it's everything's right out of context. And when I ask him, have you even read the very pages that I was referring to? And of course he hadn't. So my next question was, well, how do you know I'm taking it out of context if you've never read the pages that I'm referring to? At least I've read these things. It would do me no good to make a habit of constantly taking things out of context. And to say that I'm doing that, I had to admit, I don't have the imagination to make this stuff up. This is the stuff movies are made of. Well, certainly not Salt Lake movies, but I mean, if someone else was to do a life in history, because they did that, they did a movie years ago, I think back in the 40s or something, with Dean Jagger playing Brigham Young, and Vincent Price, I think, played Joseph Smith. Can you imagine that? That was kind of a strange casting.
That's a mismatch, I think.
But can you imagine if they were to make a movie on Joseph Smith now? And no holds barred, we're going to do it the way it actually happened.
Ooh.
Mormons wouldn't be allowed to go see it because it'd be rated R.
Yeah,
they
definitely
But definitely this guy did not live the virtuous life that the faith-promoting books talk about.
That's right.
And that's sad because you have so many people looking up to him and not really understanding that there's another side to the story.
Mm-hmm. And even
tragic.
The side that they do read is so polished up that it almost isn't believable.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think the majority of the LDS church members are aware of the many wives that Joseph Smith had, and do you think that they even care?
You know, that's a real interesting question, because it seems like all Latter-day Saints seem to know that Brigham Young had many wives.
Uh-huh.
But when you bring up Joseph Smith, all of a sudden there's a disconnect. And I've talked to some Latter-day Saints who wouldn't really agree with that. I've talked to many Latter-day Saints who insist that Joseph Smith had only one wife, and that was Emma.
Mm-hmm.
And when you bring up some of these other names, they've never heard of these names before. They didn't never even entertain the idea that he possibly could have married more than one wife at the same time. But I have talked to Mormons like that. They're not aware of these things. So,
That's interesting that you say that, because I was born and raised in a polygamy group, and I never heard that he had wives like that. And I certainly didn't know he was married to women that were already married. I mean, that was totally, I'm not even sure.
You know, that's a real troublesome area. The polyandry, it's like some can accept, okay, I'll accept that he had more than one wife. But to accept that he had a wife that was simultaneously married to a living man, I think that troubles even some of the most devout. And I hope it does.
I hope it does, too.
You know, because
that is troubling.
Because that's repugnant. Mm-hmm. You know, it's repugnant, and it's one of the reasons why I could have no respect for this man. And because he's always making excuses for himself. He's using his authority as a prophet of God, quote-unquote, mm-hmm. as a leader among these people. And he uses that to manipulate the people and to actually excuse his bad behavior. Not long ago in General Conference, there was actually a sermon given on how to recognize a false prophet. And one of the things that was listed was actually changing the sexual norms. And I thought, well, if anybody did that, it was Joseph Smith.
Well, yeah, polygamy was brought to North America with
certainly,
him.
Certainly. Polygamy was not something that was recognized in our culture.
Right.
It certainly, you can read about it in the Bible. The way you read about it in the Bible, though, it tends to expose it as something that was merely tolerated by
mm-hmm.
God. It was never a command or a necessity
right.
in order to receive any type of salvation.
And that's our point
that's for
the
sure.
show. Yeah.
And you don't find it in the New Testament at all.
Mm-hmm.
You don't find it there, and yet Mormons tell us that theirs is a restoration of the way Christianity used to be, but yet there's this big blank page when it comes to polygamy
mm-hmm.
in Christianity in the early church. You don't see it, and yet polygamy was a part of what Mormons call the restoration of all things.
Right.
Well, really? Well, where do we see that?
Mm-hmm.
You have to use this argument that there was a complete apostasy, as if all the records were completely burned and erased, to justify some of these teachings. Because when you look at early Christian church history, you don't see this pattern.
Mm-hmm.
So they have to use that argument.
Mm-hmm. that's true. Okay, we're all ready to open up our telephone lines. If you want to give us a call at 801-973-TV20, 801-973-8820, and we do already have calls coming in. And so we have Diana and Sandy first. Hello, Diana.
Hi.
Hello, you're on the air.
Okay, thank you. I have a question for both Doris and Bill, and I'll ask the two questions, and then I'll get off the phone so I can listen to what you say through the TV.
Okay, that sounds good.
Okay. Joseph Smith married women that were already married, and if they still lived with their husbands, I wondered what the benefit was for him. I had heard that it was around owning land. And then kind of a part B to that question is, I also heard that Joseph Smith married women after death. And then I'll ask another question and get off.
After who died, Diana, he or the woman?
So after Joseph Smith died.
Okay, sealed to
I mean after, yes. after, I'm sorry, after the woman died, that he married the woman after death. And then another question is, even with the Mormons' definition of what celestial marriage is, according to their definition of it, well, then are they not practicing polygamy in the celestial kingdom then? And I'll get off the air.
Okay, thank you, Diana.
Thank you.
Got some loaded questions.
Three. Well, the second one, dealing with Joseph Smith being married to dead women, I'm not aware of him being sealed to any dead women. I know there were women that were sealed to him after he died. There's no doubt about that.
Yeah.
That can be easily documented. As far as Mormons practicing polygamy in the hereafter, certainly that's open.
Mm-hmm.
That's going to happen. You've got three apostles right now that are sealed to two women.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they were both widowers, or all three widowers. They remarried, and I have not heard any Mormon say that they're not going to be married to both of these women. In fact, I brought this up to a tour guide. Well, they don't call them tour guides at the museum, but it was a gentleman. I'm sure he's a Melchizedek priesthood holder, but I was on the second floor, and we were standing in front of some of the paintings, and I pointed to one of them, and I mentioned how this gentleman's been sealed to two women. After his first wife died, do you believe he's going to be married to both of them in the next life? And he's absolutely. He
mm-hmm.
didn't even balk.
Yeah.
You know, he didn't even, you know, fudge a bit. He says absolutely that they were going to be married. He was going to be married to both of them. So polygamy certainly is going to be an issue
mm-hmm.
in the next life.
Yeah,
there's no doubt about it.
It
now,
is. It's
what
there.
Was the first question?
The first question was, why would he marry the already married women?
Oh.
She thought it had to do with land, but was there something else?
I don't know how it could be land.
I haven't heard that one before.
You know, the thing about the polyandry thing is, you would imagine, and it seems to be, that a lot of these husbands knew about this. Why would you
yeah,
do that?
Some of them did.
Why would you do that? And in fact, I've asked Mormons who try to defend Joseph Smith. I say, okay, if Joseph Smith came up to you and wanted your wife, would you give her to him? Would you really do that? Because I certainly wouldn't give mine.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, I wouldn't give anybody mine. But yet, would you do that? And you know, it's easy to say, well, I'd pray about it. You know, I mean, I've heard responses like that, and that's kind of scary, I think.
Yeah, well, I think it is too. I agree. Okay, let's go to Alan on line three from Ogden. Hello, Alan. Alan.
Hi, I have a question for both of you.
Okay.
Hello.
Yes. Have you turned your TV down?
Yes, I will.
Okay.
I have a question for both of you.
Okay.
This is a question on how the translation of the plates were done, but versus the Bible. I was wondering, what is the difference between how God spoke to the prophets to make the Bible, and what manner Joseph Smith had done it through making the Book of Mormon?
You mean as far as giving us the word of God? God spoke to the prophets?
Yeah, and how, in what manner? I know that Joseph Smith had like a stone that he looked in a hat.
A seer stone.
Uh-huh.
And was able to get it. I mean, does God operate that way?
We don't see anything like, as far as, I don't see anywhere in the Old Testament where that was ever done. How God actually transmitted his thoughts to the prophets, I can't explain that either. I don't think the Bible really goes into that much detail.
Yeah.
But certainly the way that the Book of Mormon came about was that Joseph Smith did use a seer stone. He put this rock into a hat. He drew the hat closely to his face to exclude the light, and in the darkness, according to David Whitmer, the spiritual light would shine. Something resembling parchment would appear, and on that appeared the writing. He would read off the characters to his scribe, primarily David Whitmer, although Emma was a scribe for a while, as well as Martin Harris. There was another one, too, that I was reading about, but very, very short period of time. They would read back the characters, read back what Joseph Smith said to them, and if it was correct, it would go on to the next set of characters.
But you say you don't see that anywhere in the Bible, of how prophets were inspired to write down God's thoughts or anything?
Not when it comes to Scripture, no. Now, I know there's a portion in the Old Testament that talks about the Urim and Thummim, which, of course, is the same wording that Joseph Smith used for the object that was buried with the plates that look like spectacles. But even that is very vague. It tends to give yes or no answers. How that happens, I have no idea, but it certainly was not used for translation purposes or anything like that. So you can't draw a parallel with that. So I don't know if that answers your question adequately.
Yeah, thank you very much.
Sure.
Okay, thank you for calling. Okay.
Thanks.
Good night. Okay, we'll go on to line two with Mark in Salt Lake. Hello, Mark.
Yes,
you're on the air.
Before this, I know of two families that are, I don't think they're aligned to any polygamous group, but especially the one, they're really fine people, but that's beside the point. My question was, do you know, and not only the fundamentalists, but the reorganized church, the Community of Christ, do they have a non-amended Book of Mormon, or do they read the standardized Book of Mormon?
What do you mean by standardized?
The LDS.
Yeah.
The LDS, but you know all the changes that have taken place.
Mm-hmm.
Does the Church of Christ or the Community of Christ in the fundamentals, do they use an older version that had the...
Without all those changes, maybe.
Well, they would definitely use one that was before 1981 that I was referring to before, but I'm not exactly sure which edition they are using.
It'd be interesting to get a hold of one.
I have a copy. I'm just not sure which edition that is.
I
would imagine that it probably would... Of course, I'd have to substantiate if they made any corrections to it later on or alterations. But you'd have to go back before the 1860s when the RLDS Church was founded.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they'd have to be using a Bible version like that. Mm-hmm. Whereas the LDS Church has made continuous changes and corrections. A lot of them are very minor. They're not real major. But they've been kind of continually correcting and altering it up until the 1980s. Which, of course, we wouldn't expect the Community of Christ to follow suit with those corrections.
Right.
They wouldn't do that.
Yeah.
But I'm not sure what edition they use. That's a good question.
Okay, well, thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you, Mark. Okay, we have Brant from Clearfield calling. Hello, Brant.
Hey, Doris.
Hi, you're on the air.
Thank you. Thanks for taking my call.
You're welcome.
I have a quick question. I was wondering, this LDS Church with all its billions of dollars of resources, do they have any programs for women who escape polygamy, to them to, you know, get back into the working life and, you know,
no,
to help
don't.
Them with their emotional and, you know, physical selves?
I haven't heard of any at all that they've got. I just haven't heard that they've set up any programs at all. Have you heard of any?
I'm really not aware of any. I know that there are some individual Mormons that have kind of stepped up and tried to help out in some cases, but it is an interesting thing to pursue, I think, because you would almost think there would be some guilt by association. Hey, this is our prophet, too, and we have to admit that he never did renounce this. Brigham Young didn't renounce it. John Taylor never renounced it. You know, you would think there would be a little bit of responsibility by association, but
they
would step up to the plate.
Yeah,
I'm not aware of any, if there are.
And it wasn't like the manifesto, you know, was cut and dry and, you know, a one-event thing where it says, you know, plain and clearly that polygamy is no longer to be lived and is a commandment of God to not live this anymore. You know, they had two manifestos and they were just kind of wink-wink, you know, we're just
kind of
see what we can get away with.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the 1904 manifesto was really the now we really mean it manifesto, sort of.
Yeah, you think guilt by association or something. That's just, wow, that's sad. Yeah. What other question? So Joseph never allowed his wife to see the gold plates, doll?
Mm-mm. No, nobody did. There weren't any. There weren't any gold plates.
I don't think they were either.
I mean, that's the whole thing. I mean, they had to pray before seeing them. Do you have to pray before seeing anything that is tangible?
Yeah.
The witnesses who claimed to see them, all 11 of them, had to get in this prayerful mood before they could see anything. And the question I want to ask is, if I happened to be walking down the road when the 3 or the 8 were looking at the plates, would I have seen them at the same time? No. I wouldn't, because they didn't see them. They saw them in vision.
They did not see
any actual gold plates at all.
Yeah, second sight, and it's very well documented throughout, you know, history.
Right.
One more question. Doesn't the RLDS kind of reject the Pearl of Great Price?
They don't use it as part of their standard works, that's for sure. No, they don't.
I think all they have is the Book of Mormon.
They do continually add to their Doctrine and Covenants, though. They do add to that.
Well, thanks for taking my call, and God bless you guys.
Thank you, Brent.
Your program is so much needed, and your website and your ministry.
Thank you very much. We appreciate your call. Good night.
Me too.
Okay, we have Erica from Bountiful calling. Hello, Erica.
Yes,
you're on the air. Hello?
I'm here.
Yeah. Is your phone turned, or your television turned down?
Yes.
Okay, go ahead.
Okay, I just have a question for you. First of all, I am LDS, but I have struggled with the whole polygamy thing. It's really a hard thing for me to wrap my head around. I'm totally against it.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just curious about, you mentioned that Joseph Smith married other men's wives.
Uh-huh.
And I knew he was married to more than one wife, but where are you getting the information that he married other men's wives? Because I'd be interested in finding that out.
There's a book written by Todd Compton, who was a Mormon in good standing. He still is a Mormon in good standing.
He is a Mormon. Right?
A well-reputed historian. And he wrote a book called In Sacred Loneliness. It's about 2 inches thick, but it has all of this information in it, documented information for all 33 wives and the 11 that were already married, and also some of the young 14-year-olds that he married.
There's also another book that just came out not too terribly long ago, and that is Joseph Smith, Rough Stone Rolling, written by a Mormon historian named Richard L. Bushman. Now, Bushman, he concedes that he had 10 polyandrous wives. He doesn't say 11. I'm not sure which one is the one in dispute with him, but he does admit that there were at least 10 that he was married to in a polyandrous relationship.
Okay.
And these would not be classified with that typical horrible moniker of anti-Mormon. These are Mormons of record, and I would say in good standing. I know Richard L. Bushman. I've heard him interviewed many times, different radio interviews and such, and he's very faithful to the LDS Church. He's very faithful to Joseph Smith, although, Eric, I'll tell you something. When this subject comes up, and it does in all the interviews that I've heard him be involved in, and you can sense that even Richard L. Bushman is troubled by this because it doesn't make sense to him either, because there's no excuse for polyandry, even in a Mormon context. There's no excuse for polyandry. The only reason that would be allowed for polygamy at all, according to the Book of Mormon, is if God wants to raise up seed. Well, I think with Mary Elizabeth Rollins Leitner, after Joseph Smith died, I think she had like 7 more children. So we know that her husband never had a problem.
Right.
You know, I mean, she ended up having several kids afterwards. So what would be the reason for this? It's real troubling.
Everyone tells me that the reason, because I do have such a problem with it, that the reason is that the men needed to take care of the wives, and I always say, well, did they need to sleep with the wives?
That's a good point, Erica.
I've
taking
asked
care
that.
Of them without doing that.
Right.
Yeah. Okay. My other question is, you guys mentioned that, or I heard, I think, on one of your other shows that you think that the LDS Church will bring polygamy back, and I'm just wondering where you're getting that idea, or I don't know how to explain my question. Do you know what I'm saying?
Where we're getting the idea that the Mormon Church will bring it back? Is that your question?
Yes.
Well, speaking for myself, I get calls and emails from people, from women, who have been told by their missionaries or spiritual leader in the Mormon Church, when they were Mormons, that it was going to come back at some point, and they need to have their heart ready to do that. And I, in fact, there's even one I just received a week or two ago where she left the Mormon Church. She said she felt totally abused by that. In fact, next week I'm going to read that email from her, anonymously, of course, where they just flat out told her that it's going to come back and she needs to be prepared for that.
Yeah.
Have you heard of any?
I hear kind of both sides to that. I've heard that side. I've talked to, I remember talking to one LDS man in particular who had no problem with it and was hoping it would happen. I don't know what his wife thought about that. I was just talking to him. But I'll tell you something. There's some interesting developments in our culture that I think could certainly open the door to that.
Sure could.
This whole issue of same-sex marriage, I mean, if that was to ever become a norm in our society, there would be no moral high ground to prevent polygamy.
Right.
Which is kind of odd because I had an interesting conversation with a homosexual gentleman not too long ago, and it was interesting that he wanted to have marriage be okay for him, but I asked him, I said, well, what about polygamy? He says, oh, no, he didn't want it for them. I thought, well, why not? I mean, what's your reasoning? It all comes down to personal preference, which is, of course, a bad way to make judgment sometimes. But, but nonetheless, if that was to become the law of the land, I don't know how our government could prevent it. I really don't. I could see it happen. I could see it being opened up for all sorts of things.
Oh, yeah, and I can see a real social mess resulting from it, too.
I think the big question, too, Erica, is, how would the Mormon Church respond to that if that was to be a major push? Let's say a lot of the fundamentalist groups really started getting to lobby together and really started pushing hard to make polygamy legal. How would the Mormon Church respond to it? They can't really say we would need a new revelation. It's still in their scriptures.
Right.
So that's the point. Section 132 is still there.
I
don't know how they would. I think it would be a public relations disaster, but it would be very fascinating to see how they would react to it.
Mm-hmm, I would.
Yeah, I definitely, if that ever did happen, I would be out of here. I do have to say, I think that the LDS Church, you know, they do a lot of really great things, and I want to point out that there is a huge difference between the LDS Church and the FLDS Church and the things that they're, I mean, they're sexually abusing and molesting those children, those poor girls, and I applaud you guys on trying to help those girls get out of the horrible situation, but I do agree as far as the polygamy thing. I don't believe it. I don't agree with it, and it's kind of been a hard thing for me.
Can I ask you a question, Erica?
Yeah, and believing in everything else except for that part of it, so...
Can I ask you a quick question, though? You talked about the differences between the LDS and the FLDS.
Uh-huh.
In your understanding of what you believe as a Latter-day Saint, and I don't know if you're real familiar where we would believe, where we're coming from as evangelical Christians, but wouldn't you have to agree that the LDS Church is probably closer to the FLDS Church than it would be, let's say, the church I attend or the church Doris attends? Why is it that the LDS Church want so much to sound like they're one of us, but yet not a part of the FLDS Church, when doctrinally, in probably most regards, they would be much more closer to them? Have you ever thought about that?
You know, I really have. I've done so much research. I've gone to lots of different churches. I am so analytical, and that's why I struggle. That's why I haven't even gone to the temple yet. I'm supposed to go get sealed with my husband, and I haven't done it yet because he's still sealed to his ex-wife, and to me, that's wrong. I'm not going to do it until their ceiling is broken. I don't think that they're more like the FLDS than say Christian Church. I definitely believe that they are Christian, but I think just like in any religion, there is things that maybe they get messages from God, and then maybe because man is human, they twisted or get a little bit part of it wrong, and that's why I think you just have to pray and make sure you have your own relationship with God.
Well, Erica, keep checking things out. Just keep researching and keep looking and finding out these things for yourself, and don't take anybody else's word for it at all. You check it out personally.
All right.
Okay. Well, thank you
so
for
much.
Calling. Uh-huh. We appreciate your call.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Uh-huh. Good night. Okay. Well, we're getting close to the end, but we still have time for a quick question, I think. This wasn't brought up tonight on a phone call, although it kind of was alluded to, but many of the people that I dialogue with and talk with, they believe that these marriages, even the ones that Joseph Smith had to these 11 women, that there was no sexual contact at all. It was just to be sealed to them. And what's your thoughts on that?
Both Bushman and Compton tend to concur on this, that there's really no evidence to say there wasn't any sexual relationship. And again, we have to go back to the whole, why did he marry them in the first place?
Right. What was it for?
If the whole purpose of it is to raise up seed and things like that, why would he do it without that?
And that's what it says in Jacob 2:30, mm-hmm. that it was to rise up seed. And even in the section 132 itself, yeah. is for that purpose. It's not for any other reason.
And again, why would in a polygamous relationship, that's one of the important aspects of it. And that's, I think, one of the reasons why when Brigham Young talks about this in his comment that I just quoted from 1871, that so many people left the church because of it.
Yeah.
It went against everything they saw as being traditional in mm-hmm. how they're raised, mm-hmm. in their Christian norms, their Judeo-Christian norms. It still affected them back then.
Right.
And that's why they left. It wasn't for just this idea we're going to be married forever.
Right.
It was because there was more to it than that.
That's true. Well, there's Craig from Salt Lake City on the line, but Craig, we're out of time. If you would call back next week, or you can email me at tv@aboutpolygamy.com with your question, and we'd be happy to answer it either by email or on the show next week. Thanks for coming again tonight, Bill. We appreciate you being here, and we thank our viewers and our callers for calling in. And we just would like to know what you think about a God that would command a man to love his wife and like Christ loved the church, and then turn around and make that woman share her husband with other women and make polygamy part of the salvation plan. You know, Jesus Christ died on the cross for our sins, and according to the scriptures of Old Testament prophecy, this was fulfilled right precisely to the letter of what the Old Testament had said. Jesus was buried, giving proof that he was dead. 3 days later, he came out of the grave. And that, of course, proved that his mission here was successful. He was seen. 500 people saw him at the same time at the resurrection, proving that it wasn't an hallucination or a fabrication. I have a question. Has your prophet been resurrected? Has the one that you turn to for spiritual truth come out of the grave? If he has, bring on the witnesses. We want to hear them, all 500 of them. And if not, then you need to turn from him and to the one who has came out of the grave and can give you the power to live the life that you need to live here and to get into heaven when you die. Jesus Christ is the author and the captain of our salvation. We want to thank you for joining us tonight. We've enjoyed being with you. See you next week because he loves us and because he lives. We'll see you then.
This has been the audio podcast edition of Polygamy, What Love Is This? This program is a production of A Shield and Refuge Ministry and Main Street Church of Brigham City. You can view current and past video episodes as well as download audio episodes of this program at whatloveisthis.tv. If you or someone you know is in need of assistance in leaving a polygamous situation, please contact us. We are here to help. All of our contact information can be found at shieldandrefuge.org or call us at 877-425-9993. If you have any questions or comments about this or any of our other programs, we'd love to hear from you. Write us at email@whatloveisthis.tv. Thanks for listening, and we hope you'll join us again. Mm-hmm.